Hello and welcome everybody to episode 112 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON field investigator in the state of Pennsylvania, city of Philadelphia. And today's episode is sponsored by the podcast Let's Find Out with co-host Diego, available on all podcast platforms and YouTube. You can also find that information in the episode description below or over our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. Today, I want to welcome special guest Dave Emens, who is a lifelong UFO and ET abduction experiencer. Dave also served in the U.S. Army as a combat platoon sergeant in Vietnam. He's also had a top security clearance in nuclear weapons. And he is also a podcast and radio blog host of his show, Strange Reality with Dave Emens. We've actually been on the show a couple times, two times actually. So you can actually go and check the interviews that I actually did out over on his show. But we're welcome to have him today. We're going to probably go through his lifelong experiences being a contactee, his time in the military, his three books that he is the author of. He's actually working on a fourth now as well. So we have a lot of information to go over today. So as we always like to say, strap on them seatbelts. We're going for a ride. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 112 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON field investigator in the state of Pennsylvania, city of Philadelphia. And today's episode is sponsored by the podcast Let's Find Out with co-host Diego. You can get that on all podcast platforms and over at YouTube. You can check that link out over at our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. And let's go ahead, without ado, bring in our guest today, special guest Dave Emens. Dave, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Jesse. And I know we've done some shows together, and so we're probably really comfy, like a cat in a lap.
Yes, I would say we are by this point, yes.
Yeah. Of course, I don't have a cat.
I got three, so.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, it's good to have you on the show over here this time. I know I've been on your show a couple times, so we'll spread the love all over, you know?
Sure. There you go.
So I guess you were born in the Midwest. You were raised in Illinois. You are a lifelong experiencer.
Right.
Where did that start for you? Was it the experience or was it the interest of the subject?
It was the experience. I'll go really quick. I know we talked early before the show started.
Yeah, take your time.
I want to cover some major, I guess, points, because there's so many things that's happened to me in the last, ever since I was 13 years old, really. And that's where it started. At 13, I saw a craft. I was outside sitting, and I just saw the blue glimmer, shiny stuff at the bottom of the craft. It had a couple of lights on it. Those aren't lights. Those are propulsion systems, of course, as I found out through other scientists. But I can't remember exactly what happened, but I ended up in bed with my legs numb. And I asked my brother, I said, did you see or hear anything? He said, no, go to sleep. So that was it for that one. But the one that was really big, it was a year later. I was 14. This was back in 63, before a lot of CGI and all this other stuff was going. Well, of course, we don't know. The secret government space program, they've had a lot of stuff that we don't even know about. And they still do. They're about 60, 70 years advanced.
Right.
But that's beside the point. We might discuss that in disclosure. You said in the as part B of the program. But my buddy and I were sitting on the steps down. He was at the bottom apartment. He lived with his dad, and we were drinking Pepsi out of glass bottles. That dates me right there, at 63. So we were listening to a 10 transistor radio, and we're just sitting there about 10, 15, 20, 10, 20, somewhere in there. We can't really nail it down because neither one of us wore watches. I didn't get my Timex watch until a year later. That's, you know, the real cheap watches back then, but they worked. But we didn't know the time, what was going on. We actually smelled something first. It smelled like sulfur, and which now I kind of look at it, and I don't know exactly what it was. Somebody told me, he said, well, sulfur means evil. That's a devil. No. That's not it at all. It's kind of like ozone, and it's kind of like when a craft comes in the atmosphere, and it collects up on nitrogen, carbon dioxide, and oxygen, and that all fuses together and kind of burns together and puts off a smoke in which it smells like ozone, but it kind of smells a little bit like sulfur. But as kids, that's all we knew to go by.
Right.
But then we looked up after we heard the radio crackling and stuff. There's a lot of disturbance on the radio. And we looked up and we saw these lights. Of course, I know them now as the propulsion systems. They were in front. There's about three of them shining kind of like down. And the craft was treetop level, so it had to have been at least about 70 feet high at the most, some of the treetops there. So my buddy said, let's go up and get a flashlight out of my dad's truck. So we walked up the steps and got to his dad's truck, and he got a flashlight out. And we walked the road that's parallel to my road. His road was just, you know, we had a couple of yards that separated our roads, but we just was able to communicate back and forth and walk back and forth. But we got up on the road, and he was a year younger than me. He's 10 months younger than me. So we got up on the road, and we started walking. And he flashed his flashlight at this object that was just moving really slow with those lights. And he flashed the flashlight at it, and he said, and in my book, and I think he's got it confused with the leaves at the top of the tree. When the lights passed the tops of the trees with the leaves, it looked like it flickered, and it was. He said, "It's a signal back to us." He said, "And my throat is dry. That's just you weird." but he signaled, and he said that he got an answer back. And I looked at him. He said, "I don't know," because I looked at the craft pointing to the tops of the trees, and we got up this empty lot. Actually, this empty lot overlooked my house and my yard. You just had to walk down a little incline, and then you're there in my backyard. So the craft actually stopped over my backyard. We were standing in this lot, vacant lot up above from it. The craft was probably only at that time 50, 60 feet in, high off the ground. And we were looking at it at an angle, it made us probably 80, 90 feet away from the craft and looking directly at it. We stood there. We were mesmerized by this thing. It looked like one of these old-time tops. It had a fat bottom and a fat middle, roly-poly type thing, like the old tops that you cranked up by hand and let it go.
Right.
That's what it kind of looked like. And then the top looked like a bell top on, another roll on top. But the craft was probably about 30 to 35 feet wide. It was probably about 22 feet, 24 feet high. It was hard for me to estimate at that time, but and being a kid, I didn't look for details like that, but I'm just estimating it what I saw. And my buddy and I saw it together. He pinched me just to make sure we weren't dreaming. And he pinched too hard, I remember. I said, "Ow, that hurt." And he said, "I had to make sure we're not dreaming." I said, "Well, do it to yourself." He was really kind of joking around a little bit during this thing. We turned our attention back on the craft. And we were looking, and I told him, I said, "I don't want to see them." I said, "I think that'd be scary to see these ETs, extraterrestrials or aliens, what we were calling them." But he said, "We just have to run if they come out." I said, "No, I don't think we will." We stood there and kept watching. It had portals, windows in the middle section of the craft. It looked like I said, one of these old Nazi UFO, these flying saucers that the Nazis had. And that's what it kind of looked like. It had the windows in the midsection, and there were portals. And we saw shadows, but we didn't see anybody. But we saw the shadows moving around. And he said, "Did you see that?" And I said, "Yeah, I saw some shadows there." And I said, I wonder why we can't see them. I said, I really don't want to see them. And he said, "Oh, come on." He said, let's just stand here. I said, "Oh, yeah, I'm not leaving. I'm going to take this all in. I wish Brother Jack was here." That was, Brother usually hung out with us too. I said, "He's really missing this." And he said, "Yeah." And we stood there and we watched, and this is something we can't figure out. How long we were there, we don't really know. I've had a regress dream 2 or 3 weeks later, to make this a little quicker and simpler, that we were inside the craft. It was hot. It was hot temperature inside. It was dark. I was sitting on something that looked like a metal table. I was really groggy, and I was trying to put a shirt on. The shirt didn't fit. I couldn't button it up. And I just give up and I put my hands down. And actually, come to think about it, I felt my friend was in the craft also. He was just over to my right, but it was so dark I couldn't see. Either that or I was dumbed down so much that I wasn't supposed to see. So as I was sitting there, I just kind of drifted off. And then I found, then after that, I found myself back on the property where we were standing. And my buddy, the shirt was his shirt. He wore a smaller shirt than mine. So he wore something like a medium, and I probably had a large child shirt, I guess adolescent shirt, but I don't know if the sizes are different back then than what they are now, but that's the way it was. I was bigger than he was, so I had a hard time buttoning up the shirt. We got back standing there, and we looked up, and I saw the craft take off due west, right through the clouds like a bullet, and it changed position. And later on, it was in the 70s or whatever, I went back there and I drew it was after my military service, I drew a plot where the craft, we saw it, and then where it moved to. It moved about 30 degrees without us even seeing it. So that tells us that something was going on and we were out and we couldn't see it. And I saw it just jet out. I mean, it just took off into the clouds to the west, due west. We were looking at this craft from the south to the southwest. We were looking directly at it and it had a southwest direction. So it did move over to the west, maybe 30, 40 degrees. And I, like I said, we didn't notice it. And he did not even remember it. I talked to him somewhat when I wrote the book. There were some things that he observed and I didn't observe. At least now I'm not sure what he observed, because it's kind of like his memory has lapsed on some of it, and he's been telling the same story for some time. And it was like the flashlight thing. I told him, I said, that was a leaf flickering. And a buddy, who's my best friend, he still is. You know, we still talk about this today, and people ask us when we get together. But he didn't see the craft take off, in which told me I was out of my dumbed-downness a little bit before he was. So he was still probably dumbed down. He didn't see the craft leave. It just jetted off. And so when we kind of come to our senses, we looked at each other, and he said, I'm going to go home and tell my dad, I just saw a flying saucer. I said, yeah, I want to go home too. And you know, my mom will hear this, you know. And so when he got home, his dad said, okay, son, yeah, you saw a flying saucer, and I'll go to bed. We were out of school at that point, but it was summer vacation. So I went home. And I found the door bolted. I mean, my mom locked it up solidly. She thought I was going to spend the night at my friend's house. But I didn't. I knocked on the door. She opened up and she says, do you know how late it is? I said, no, Mom. I wish she would have told me. Because then I could have put a marker on the time that we were gone or we were missing. And she didn't tell me. She said, I saw a flying saucer. She said, I'm flying saucer your butt. Now get in the house. It's late. Wow. So it must have been later than 11 o'clock, because normally my family, and they'll watch the news at late at 10 o'clock or 10:30. We had CBS, we only had three or four channels, but they would watch the news before they went to bed. So it had to have been later than 11. And this whole thing started about 10:15, 10:20. So I think we had about an hour or so of missing time, and we didn't really know it. But as being a person who takes notes, and I am a ledger person, I got a ledger now that I keep going, and this stuff keeps going until it's still around. And I made these notes, and 2 or 3 weeks later, I dug out an implant. It was in my left testicle, and I was in the bathroom, and I noticed a line testicular area. And I noticed an inch line. It was like a little red line. And now I know it is a laser line. And I looked at that and I felt a lump underneath that line. And I said, what's going on with this? So I tried to push it out. And I kept pushing. It took me about 4 or 5 minutes to get it out. And I finally worked it out. And it came out of that cut line. I got it in my hand. It looked like a little M&M, except it was kind of an ash color, tan color. And then it started turning darker as it was out in the oxygen. I took it, showed it to my mom, and she says, what is that? I said, I got that from my private mom. And she goes, oh, that's an ingrown hair. I said, no, it's not, Mom. She, what do you mean? I said, there was a red line cut, and I took it out of that red line. And then she froze. She didn't know what to say. She said a red line. I said, yes, a thin red line. I said, I popped this thing right back out where it was cut. She goes, cut? I said, yeah. She goes, and she looked like she had a little bit of fear on her. Then she said, throw it away. And so I threw it away. Well, back then, we didn't have the science to keep up with implants and things of that nature. Yep. Especially a young boy that probably say, you know, probably poo-poo the whole thing.
Right.
Just like a lot of them are doing now with private civilians who see things. But that was where it all started, Jesse.
So do you think that they put a screen memory there to make you think that you were only there for a short amount of time?
Yes. That's what dumbing down, I call it dumbing down. I know a lot of people call dumbing down like, they dumb down society. They don't let them know the truth and they don't let them learn wisdom. And that's dumbing down of society. But I call it dumbed down because you can't do anything except see and observe.
Right.
I've been dumbed down, I guess, 5 or 6 times that I remember. And I know the feeling and I know what it does. I know that you can only look and observe and just behave and just do what they're going to do to you. You don't have a choice anyway. They have
complete control. The outcome is what they're going to have. Make it happen anyway. So I also seen that you had an IQ of 138 when you were in high school.
Yes.
Do you think that being an experiencer that this is connected in your thoughts?
Yes. Being an experiencer, contactee, usually the word for it, if it's a lifelong follow, if they follow me for your whole life, and that's what they're doing to me, I'm basically a contactee. An experiencer is probably just a one-off situation, but I think it could be in the bloodline because my mom and my aunts have actually seen UFOs near their house.
Okay, that makes sense then. Yeah.
Yeah. And my mom, I'm going to actually do a show with her, and I waited for her to get better. She's 96, and she's going to talk about some of the ETs and stuff that's been in her house. And she's been kind of, you know, shaken up a little bit because they kind of handled her in bed. She's got some stories to tell on that, and she saw the huge triangle craft that we saw back in 2011. It was April 9th, and we saw this huge triangle craft that covered 9 houses long in the whole block, the whole street that we lived on. And my mom and 2 brothers that were there with my mom at the time, they saw the thing too. It happened about 8:30 in the evening, and this huge craft just. It was coming from the north and it was coming towards, you know, towards me. And I was on the phone with my brother and I said, I'm watching something. I'm going to have to, you know, let you go. It wasn't a cell phone because I didn't have no camera possibilities. So it was one of those phones that you can remote phone that you can take out on your porch or whatever. But I said, okay. And I hung up and I watched this thing. I saw the 2 bright lights first, coming towards me. And I saw this craft that was huge. It was kind of like a gray metallic craft. And it had the 2 big lights on the back, the propulsion system. There's only 2 of them, the engines firing up. The one in the front, it looked like it had 2 glass globes that hung down about 15 feet. Each one of them hung down about 15 feet. And it was about 6 feet wide, something like that, right in the nose of the craft. I believe that was probably, that's another propulsion system. That they didn't fire up because they were at low, they were traveling very low speed. It's only about 30 miles an hour that they were traveling. And this huge ship could have never stayed aloft if it was a civilian or a human craft. It would have never stayed aloft at that speed. And only about, it clipped a tree across from my house. And that tree was only about 50, 60 feet tall.
Right.
So that tells you I was directly under this craft. And I looked up in shock and awe. I mean, I was awed. I'd seen, you know, craft before, but this was huge. And I looked up under and I saw a grating system in the middle of the craft. It was about 30 feet wide and it looked like slats. And it was like a ventilation system.
Okay.
And I think when they fire up, they get that heat energy and those slats must heat up and turn red. Because a lot of times people said they see a red light in the center of these triangle craft.
Right.
Well, that's from the heat that's being expelled from the craft. It's kind of like a barbecue grill. It looked like to me. It's what I called it at first. But that was huge. And I saw one little red light back towards the center of the craft. And I wasn't up high enough to see the top of the craft. I was at the bottom of it. It went over me, and it made just a little bit of scum or buzzing sound. It's hardly audible, and I could hear it though. It's like a little buzzing sound. It went over me, and then it went due south, and it was gone. Then it fired up, and bingo, it was gone. I watched it until it zoomed. I called it my mom, my brother's down the street, and I said, "Did you guys see that?" My mom answered the phone, and she said, "See it." She says, "My God," she said, "it scared me to death." She said, "I didn't want to step out on the porch. I was afraid of being abducted." Now, this was a woman, she was about 84 at the time. And this is a woman who said she used the word, she was afraid of being abducted. That told me that my mom has had a lot of experiences. And she's told me, but she hasn't told the rest of my family too much. And my brothers asked me, "So why did she talk to you about that stuff?" I said, "Because I've experienced it. She knows that she can explain it to me now. And she knows that I've had experiences early in life." And she thought I was a wacky kid anyway. I was born with a brace sideburns. I don't know if that means anything, but it's kind of a start with a DNA type of thing. And we do have a little Native American Indian in this. I got about 12% Crow Indian. My mom's okay. My mom's about 30-40% Crow, probably, if you narrow it down, because her mom, my grandmother, looked just like a Crow Indian. So did my relatives. They were all Crow Indian. So they follow Native American bloodlines.
Yes, number one, absolutely.
They also follow family bloodlines, Jesse. Right. And that's why they follow me.
Right. This has been happening for generations, which makes me think that your IQ being the way it is, you possibly have DNA that is possibly part ET, or they have manipulated it in some type of way. Now, when we talk about an IQ of 138, can you kind of explain that to people so they get an idea of what that means, an IQ of 138?
Well, the average high range IQ is 120. I've heard guys say that they've got 170, 180 higher than Einstein, and it isn't the IQ that makes things tick for you. It also takes character and all this other stuff built into that IQ. But I was playing hooky with some kids. I was on the wrong side of the fence with these boys. They were fun, but they didn't believe in school, and they got me in trouble. And my counselor, after about the second time I skipped school, he was mad, hammering his hands on the desk. He said, "I've asked the principal to expel you for this." And he said, "They won't let me." And I said, "Why?" And he goes, "Because your IQ is too high." I said, "Oh," that was the first time I knew it. He said, "Your IQ is too high. I can't get you out." So it must, you know, so I got the number 138 from him later on down the road. But I think it's somewhere around 140. It ends up between 138 and 140, somewhere there. And high school told me about that. And then when I went in the Army a year later after I graduated the high school, I went and took their exams. I maxed out their exams, and they told me I could have anything I wanted, anything. So I took nuclear weapons, a technician. So I thought that was cool, you know, nuclear weapons. Found out it wasn't so cool. I was too young to understand the military intelligence coming in once a week and drilling us for about 4 or 5 hours in a meeting room, a little conference room.
Yeah, I want to get to that too in the second half. So I want to go ahead and take our break real quick, and we can get into your military background and how that's implemented into you being, a contactee today. So let's go ahead and take our break real quick, and we'll be back right after these commercial messages. This is your host, Jesse Peek. Check out our official website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. Read up on UFO articles, including abductions, close encounters, sighting cases, megalithic structures, and more. Also, check out our new Facebook group. You'll get updates on guests every week, new events coming up, and our schedule of who we're going to have on in the future. Again, that's UFO Encounters Worldwide Facebook group, and our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com.
Have you always been curious about the unknown, the unexplainable, Do you find yourself intrigued by the mysterious and paranormal side of our world? Then Let's Find Out with co-host Diego is the podcast for you. Join in on an adventure into the world of the inexplicable and get insights from experienced researchers, investigators, and experts. Listen to mind-bending discussions and fascinating stories as Let's Find Out explores the strange, mysterious, and paranormal. Let's Find Out with co-host Diego is a unique and engaging podcast that uncovers the mysteries of the cryptic and unknown. With insightful interviews and discussions, they discover the very latest theories, discoveries, and investigations that may someday give us the final answer as to what may be behind the veil of reality. Available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, YouTube, iHeartRadio, Radio Public, TuneIn, and Rumble.
UFO Encounters Worldwide would like to announce our brand new home at the UnX Network. Listen to us every Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear UFO Encounters Worldwide podcast. That's on the UnX Network.
UFO Encounters Worldwide wants to hear from you. Have an experience or a sighting you want to share? Contact your host, Jesse Peek, at UFOEncountersWorldwide@gmail.com today.
Looking to get some UFO merchandise? We'll get some UFO Encounters Worldwide official stickers, and we also have pins. Check out our selection, DM us or email us if you're interested for inquiry, and we'll show you our selection. All pins and stickers are $3 each and $1 shipping, or you can mix and match any five for $10 and free shipping. DM us or send us an email if you're interested. All right, welcome back to the second half of episode 112. We're sitting down with our special guest, Dave Emmons. So, Dave, you were a sergeant in the U.S. Army. I was in the Army as well. You had a top secret clearance. And I just wanted to, you know, could you tell us a little bit about your time in the military because you were in Vietnam, you know, and how that kind of has helped you have insight into the military-industrial complex today with dealing with ufology and the black projects they have and et cetera, just to give us a little insight.
Okay, yeah, I started off after high school, a year after high school, one in the Army, and I took that battery of tests like I just alluded to earlier, and I ranked really high on it. And this is where I knew, well, I must have a high IQ. My brother told me, he said, those ETs helped you out. That's what he told me. I laughed at him, said, I don't know, I guess, but I was in the Army, and actually, I dropped out of that nuclear weapons program. It was in Alabama for Red Arsenal there, and it was kind of weird. I was in an elite class, about 15 guys, and most of them had degrees and master's degrees, and I just had a high school education. I was probably one of the youngest ones in that class. But I didn't really like it, not for the class. I was making 89% averaging, which was I couldn't drop out if I wanted to. But what really got me was the military intelligence that come in every week on a Saturday, and they would sit around and talk to us, give us cigarettes and soda, coffee, whatever we wanted, no alcohol, but they would sit there and talk to us, and they would take turns shifting from one table to the other, and then they'd come over and talk to me, and then another one, I'd wait 5 minutes, another one come over and talk to me. They ask you questions, simple as, like, where are you from, what's your baseball team, who's, are they winning now and stuff. So they wanted to know if you were, really staying put in the American way, because they don't want you to stray into different parties like we have now. Okay. Now they don't mind it because they're part of the whole shebang. But they wanted to keep testing your character, and they wanted to see what you were all about and see if you were slipping up. And they would ask me, said, do you write home? I said, yes. And they said, yeah, well, we want you to write home. And I said, but you guys open my letters because I can't seal them. You have to read everything we send out. He said, yeah, that's right. He said that's for security purposes. We can't have anybody saying or talking anything. Are you saying or talking anything? I said, no. I said, my parents asked me, said, what are you doing? I tell them, I said, I'm an electronic class. And I said, good. That's what we wanted to tell them. So I knew the secrecy started right off the bat, that they wanted you to give disinformation about what you were doing in order to hide the truth. And that's what they're doing today. And it's a big deal today. I mean, they're hiding the truth from history. It's not what we think it is. What their technology is way above where we're at. And so that kind of gave me a flavor of what that was all about. So I got out of it. I was just turning 20 at the time. And I wanted out of it. And I couldn't get out of it because my average was 89. And so I had to go to the post chaplain to get out of it. And so I finally got out of that class, but then they said, well, your contract is up now. You'll do what we tell you. So, okay, that's fine. So they sent me, they had to have an MOS. I went to a ammo records course for about 7 weeks. Then I had an MOS. And then I was in charge of quarters at a company there at Redstone Arsenal. And that was in 68, 69, latter 68, early 69, I was there. And so I was in charge of quarters there, and my brother got orders for Vietnam, and he had a baby that was coming due, my niece. And so I thought, okay, this is not proper. I went to my captain. I said, I want to stop my brother from going to Vietnam. He said, how are you going to do that? I said, send me. I said, I want to go. And he goes, okay. He said, well, you asked for it. He said, I want you to stay here. I said, no, I want to go. So I went to Vietnam. And my brother, I stopped him from going because brothers don't have to serve in Vietnam at the same time. So I went to Vietnam, become a platoon sergeant, a combat platoon sergeant. And I saw a lot of the waste and a lot of the things that they do there. We weren't held to a lot of top secret stuff. When you're a grunt on the battlefield, you only know what you're told to do and whatever. But I saw a lot of waste. I saw what happened to civilians. During battles, sometimes it can't be helped, but there are sometimes, you know, some other times that they shouldn't, you know, mess around with civilians. They should leave them alone. But we couldn't tell who were civilians and who were the enemy, because VC would farm during the day and then fight during the night. So it's hard to tell. We were in a really conundrum like that. But well, I got out of there, and I should have got a Bronze Star for a couple of things I did, but the reason I didn't get a Bronze Star was the lieutenant ran in combat, in action. He took off and I had to take over. So, and then calling in artillery and stuff, but that's beside the point. But towards my end of my 3 years, they called me in the office and they wanted to promote me to a lieutenant. I guess they thought maybe they wanted to get me into this top secret program, you know, with administrative stuff and all this other. And I said, no, I said, I'd go back to Vietnam. I know what would happen. They said, no, you wouldn't. So I thought about it and I said, no, I'm going to turn down the commission. I just want to take my discharge. And he said, okay, so that's my Army service. And that's how I learned a little bit about how the Army works, how combat and the collateral damage that happens to people. And, you know, I've learned all this just by a short time, 3 years in the military, and also the top secret routine that they go through. So that was the basis that helped me today to understand what MIC can do, military industrial complex, and DOD can do to mess with people, influencers, and what have you. They've done that to me, and I've talked to you, Jesse, about that stuff. So I don't want to talk about it too much, but I've had other people talk about it on air. But that's part of where I come from, and also my journalism, taking notes and ledgers, and then having an idea what happens in the top secret area, what goes on with all this stuff. That's where I learned that.
So do you think that we'll really ever truly get true disclosure? Or do you think it will always be this cover up, this disinformation show, them controlling the subject? Do you ever think we'll ever get that truth?
Well, actually they're trying to resist it, Jesse, from what I see. And I think you know quite a bit. You're involved in some of the subcommittee meetings with the MUFON and everything. You gather up information. But what I'm getting is that the Pentagon, half of them don't want it, and then the other half want to disclose. So there's a back and forth. What they're doing is just giving us a little dribble of what's going on, what's really going on. And we've been hearing from these whistleblowers about having nine spacecraft somewhere in hangars and across the country in different top secret facilities and Air Force bases. And they also have bodies of these these entities.
Yeah.
So they do have all that stuff. And I knew that from Jackie Gleason and Richard Nixon's story back in 71 and 72. I heard about that. So nobody had to convince me that there's UFOs. Matter of fact, you know, when I see people with pictures with orbs and things of that nature, I want to go deeper because I've been, you know, I got both feet involved in this UFO and ET, you know, topic. So I've seen things, done things, and things are still happening.
Yeah, it's
paranormally. So yeah.
Speaking of that, you had another major abduction after you left the military. Do you kind of want to take us through that?
Right. I've had about six abductions that I can think about. And to take a sip of water, I don't know what is my allergies.
No problem.
my tongue gets dry or whatever. But no, I've had about six abductions that I know that's happened. Others, I don't know. Sometimes you're out, you don't know what's going on. But this was a big abduction. That I even talked to Dr. David Jacobs about it at a meeting in Arkansas when they had the UFO conference. They still do. This was back in 2011 or 2012, I think, when I went there. I think it was 2012, and I talked to him about it. And this is how it went. It's the typical thing. And I hung out with other researchers and investigators, and they were in biology and they were scientists. So they kind of helped me along whenever I got into these deals. What happened, some kind of experience, I'd call them and see if I can make some sense out of it. Well, this one was really big. It followed the same line of all abductions. First of all, they kind of make you tired. They hit you with energy. And I've been hit with that here lately, the last two or three months. And it's kind of slowed me down. And I thought, well, maybe I should quit, you know, doing my podcast. In the sci-fi book I'm writing now, I don't think they'd be pissed off about that. Oh, I'm sorry. That's a word I can't use, but I don't think they'd be mad about that. But I had this experience and I was tired. I was in the office room and I was doing some computer work and I felt really tired. And I said, oh my. So I went in, I had a bad back anyway. So I went in and I laid down on my side to try to rest my back. And I had my chin inside my palm, my hand, my left hand, and I was just laying there, and it was a bright, sunny afternoon, about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I had the door open. I could see the bright light coming into the bedroom. Then I heard this crackling sound. I mean, it was loud. It was like you would stomp a box of saltines, and it just, you know, like a big crackling. And I turned to look what it was, and something hit me in the shoulder with this. It was electrical. Crackling, a static force. It hit my shoulder and it kind of numbed me. It was like a paralysis. And then I started to move again to take a look and it hit me again. I was totally paralyzed. I could only move my eyes then. I couldn't move anything except my eyes. And I thought, okay, what's going on? And I still hear the crackling in behind me and I'd love to look around, see what it was coming from. And then I heard a voice coming from the hallway. It says, Dave, you can do it. Come on, you can do it. I said, do what, sissy? It was my sister. She had died 5 years before that event. So she was actually speaking to me through a portal, I guess some dimensional portal that they opened up while they abducted me. And I asked her, I said, come to the door so I can see you. And this is why I know I was very conscious. I knew what exactly was going on. I could see the sun through the door. And she told me, I can't. I said, come to the door so I can see you. She said, I can't. Then I kind of felt weird. I said, what's going on here? I'm hearing my dead sister's voice. And I had my palm up against the headboard of the bed. And then all of a sudden, a baby's hand dropped inside my fingers. And it allowed me to move my fingers. So I grabbed the palm of the baby's hand. It was a baby, maybe something like 3 to 4 or 5 months old. And I felt the fingers. And I said, wow, that's a human baby's fingers. What are they showing me this for? Then something heavy sat near my hip area. And it lowered the bed a little bit. I took some deep breaths. Oh, my, what's next? You know? And then I kind of blew it. Then I said, "Oh God, help me! God, help me!" You know, and it went away. Everything went away. I talked to Dr. David Jacobs about that, and he laughed. He said, "Oh, you don't believe me?" I said, "No, I believe you." He said, "But they weren't abducting you at that time." He said, "They were bringing you back." He said, "That's what happens when they bring you back." He said, "There's a lot of static electricity sounds, and you're paralyzed still." And he said, "That's when they're bringing you back." I said, "Wow." So I just had it in reverse. I thought they were abducting me at that time. But it just goes to show you that. And then I've had other electrical events after that, too. I had one before that in which was just involved my hand. And then I had another event that hit my shoulder and paralyzed me a little bit, but I was able to push back on it. So they were already done with me, abducting me. So those were the big abductions. The other abductions were something I regressed, being on a ship 3 or 4 times. And that goes into a lot of the time. And you were wanting to move on to something else, Jesse?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to touch on your books because your books kind of touch on your experiences. Do you want to talk about your first book and kind of walk us through them and how what people can expect in them?
Yeah, I'll give you a brief synopsis. So now the first book is They, What Do They Want? And that book's been out for about a year and a half, and it details all these stories that I'm talking about. But since then, like in a year and a half, I've had other events and I've got in my ledger, I can actually write another book on a follow-up to that one, in which I might do. But that has all my events in there that's happened throughout my lifetime of about 60 years of my life. I've been involved with the ETs to a certain extent. The second book was Senseless Wars and Conflicts, in which I actually talk about the CIA, MIC, and these various groups that actually start wars. And the cabal is in charge of all the world, and they're in charge. They're the leaders of our countries are nothing but puppets in a way. Even our Congress and senators are compromised by the big cabal that runs things. A lot of people think the reptilians are involved. They're thinking that other ETs are involved. The humanoid ETs are involved in changing our course of history, and they're messing around with our leadership, our banks, and our scientific knowledge. So I mentioned that in the book, but it's got my Vietnam memoirs in the first part of the book, and then the second part covers the conflicts and then who starts the wars and why. They start them for money, and also they do it for depopulation and to keep the population down, in which they want to decrease us more now. But the third book is Angels and Supernatural Entities. And I can tell you a story out of that book. Angels 101. It goes through all the angels, who they are and what they've done. It goes through the Egyptian Book of the Dead and things of this nature. And the Egyptians were more elaborate than what we thought when it comes to, you know, like commandments and religion. They have 12 commandments and the Christians have 10. So I made that difference in the book. But basically, I got to the section, I'll make it real fast, but there's some obviously said, well, I got to the section where people actually saw angels. Now, in my case, I've seen an angel or some ET in a white robe. In 1971, when I got out of the service, I think it was the trauma from the service in which brought the angel to me. If this was an angel, what happened is about 3 o'clock in the morning, I felt a presence, and I was at my mom and dad's house at the time. I felt the presence and I thought, what is this? And I got up and I looked, and at the end of my bed, there's about a figure about 5'6", 5'7" tall. And it had a white robe, had a veil over its face, and was standing there looking at me. And it was just as like I said, the white robe was really kind of like shining like, and but it looked physical. It looked like something I could touch if I could reach for it. But it stood there and it looked at me for about 7 seconds, 8 seconds, somewhere like that. And then it turned real slow and walked out and walked into my mom's room. So I got up, went to my mom, and I said, "Did you see anything?" She goes, "No." She said, "What'd you see?" I said, a white robe. It probably was an angel, I think, that walked in my room and then walked in yours, and I guess it disappeared. Now, the second one come when I had a divorce in 95 was a gray alien beside my bed, but 98 when I saw the second angel. I wasn't really that destroyed by the divorce, but it does have some effect on you when you go through life changes. I was laying in bed at the same time at a different house down the street from my mom who bought this house. And it was 3 o'clock in the morning. I felt something, a presence, and I woke up and I looked, and there again, the same 5'6", 5'7", veiled face and head and white robe was standing there looking at me. And I thought, okay, what's with all this stuff? And I said, this is weird. And it turned and slowly walked into my bathroom. So I got it real quick and I looked in the bathroom and it was gone. It disappeared. So that was my two angels that I've seen, the same one. And they come in times when you have, you know, changes in your life that you're trying to, you know, cope with. And that's when angels usually appear. And like my sister saw an angel. My mom has seen an angel. These are humanoid angels, actually. You can see they come in human form mostly. So that was okay. The book there. That was a quick synopsis of that. But there's a lot more in the book than that. It talks about, you know, the various types of angels and what they've done throughout histories and supernatural entities. I get into Bigfoot. I get into cryptids, things of this nature, biblical monsters, all that stuff. My fourth book now is a conglomeration of everything from me, except I'm putting it into a third party, into the lead character in a sci-fi book. I don't want to give out the title or anything like that because it's not been sent to a publisher, but I'm about 2 weeks to finish that up. But this is about a humanoid male, Native American Indian, and he's handsome, of course, like a hero should be, and strong and big. And then the Palladian princess. The Palladians help the humans fight the bad underground people, like the reptilians, the tall grays, the mantis, and also the humanoid aliens that are here to do us harm. And they traffic people and all this other stuff in tunnels and bunkers. So this book, well, I started back in the early part of this year, but I've had so many things going on that it's kind of stymied my growth on writing, but I'm finishing up now. But it's actually ahead of the times when we're starting to find out about trafficking and bunkers and caves and this type of things. We're starting to find out about that stuff. And here I was writing about it. So I think the ETs are pushing me to get things done. When I start writing, here's a paranormal thing. When I start writing or doing anything with ETs, I should be getting a light flickering now, but I'm not. My lights will flicker, my desk light and my overhead light. Usually when I do ET work or start writing my book, it'll flicker. It's like they're telling me they're in favor of me doing this because they want me to help enlighten people. And I know you do too, Jesse.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would love to read a book like that. I'm reading one now. It's called Alien Underground Bases, and they talk about these different cultures and species that have lived underground for centuries before the flood, all the way up until this date, right, that have been doing what you just described. So that is extremely interesting. And you've been writing that for, some time now. So it's right where February, it needs to be, it's perfect timing. So that's excellent. So we're actually just like about at the end. Do you want to tell everybody where they can listen to your show? Because you're a podcast radio host as well. I know you do the writing like you do, where they can buy your books at, and give them all that information.
Okay. My show is Dave Emmons, Strange Reality. And I put my postings or my shows on Facebook, YouTube, Rumble, Spotify. And that's from your advice, Jesse. I went on Spotify.
Excellent.
And then I'm on Daily Motion, and I get into BitChute, and then, of course, LinkedIn and Twitter. So I got all those platforms, probably about 9 or 10 platforms I put my shows on, so you can catch them. On YouTube, it's like Davey Dean, D-A-V-E-Y, Dean. You can punch that in, and then our Dave Emmons and UFO Abductions, and you can get me anywhere on Google. My books are on Hangar One. Publishing, and that's where I have they got a little sidebar there for me as a small website for my books. I got two books through them, and the Senseless War book, they're all on Amazon and Kindle. So if you looked up Dave Emmons books on Amazon and Kindle, you'll find my three books that are published. And soon, hopefully in another month or so, I'll have this other book published.
Great. That's awesome. Excellent. 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 I know I actually put your name in Google and all of your information and your shows popped up. So you're very easily found on Google.
Right.
You're up there. So that's great. I want to thank you for coming on, Dave, and sharing all this information. I know an hour is pretty short to do all that, but you did a great, excellent job sharing all your experiences with us. And I appreciate you doing that today.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And I definitely recommend everybody go and check out Dave's show. It's excellent. I was on there 2 times myself. He's had a lot of great researchers, investigators, experiencers, contactees on there. So I highly recommend it. Check it out on YouTube or all podcast platforms. We'll make sure we put that information in the description of the episode below as well. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in wherever you're listening from, whether it's a podcast platform or our home at the Onyx Network. Please make sure you go and check out our sponsor, the podcast Let's Find Out with co-host Diego. You can find that information in the link in the description of the episode or over at our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to episode 112 today, and we'll be back next week with another special guest. And until next time, remember to keep your eyes in the sky. Well, what another amazing episode for episode 112 with our special guest today, Dave Emmons. I want to thank him for coming on today and really sharing about his experiences that he's had throughout his life. Quite a few, and he's definitely had the experience, making him a great researcher in this field. Somebody that is definitely great to talk to and be associated with. You can catch his podcast over out on YouTube. I highly suggest you guys check it out. He brings amazing guests on in the field, experiencers, researchers, investigators, etc. You guys get the idea of it. So make sure you go check him out. And thanks again, Dave, for coming on today. Next week, we're going to have welcome special guest Courtney Marchesini. So that should be interesting. She's been in the field for some time. She's also working with myself within UAP Medical Coalition, doing great things over there. So that should be another great episode next week. So I want to thank everybody for coming out today, no matter where you're listening from, either on all the podcast platforms over at our home at the Onyx Network Radio. So thank you for your listening ears this week to another episode of UFO Encounters Worldwide with your host, Jesse Peek. And we will see you guys next week. So until then, remember to keep your eyes in the sky.